All right, welcome to the Rewire Podcast. I have a incredible man here today who has an amazing story, is doing some really good work. Marcus Cain is a coach, nutrition coach, and also the host of Strong Not Starving Podcast. Thanks so much for being here, Marcus. Appreciate
Brian,
it.
Brian, thanks so much for having me, man. It's so nice to be on the other side of the microphone for a change.
Yeah, absolutely. We were just chatting about that a little bit beforehand, and maybe we'll just start there. I mean, podcasting, a lot of people have a podcast these days, and, you know, I find from my own perspective, it's just a great way to meet and communicate with other people. And it's just a great way to just stay on top of important conversations, learn about other people. And I kind of have a sort of a sense of curiosity, but maybe from that perspective, I mean, where did the podcast start for you? Was that your initial focus, or did you focus more on your craft first and then podcast later?
The podcast really came in as a very low bar of entry thing for people to become acquainted and familiar with what it is that I'm talking about, especially around, you know, nutrition, the specific area that I often work with nutrition. A lot of people don't want to come right out and have a conversation about that kind of stuff straight away. So the podcast was just a way for people to listen and hear a bit more about my story and just kind of be a fly on the wall if they wanted, so that they could, you know, get some help, get some support, maybe feel a bit less alone in what they're experiencing without necessarily needing to go through that extra step of like reaching out. So yeah, it started off as that, and it's become much more, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. And I never thought about it from that perspective, but it's so true that people prefer to listen in maybe even for longer periods of time than we're aware before actually asking for help or asking for what that next step may be. So before we get to that, and I'm so curious about the work you're doing, but like many of us who are doing this type of work, it's often based on our own journey and something that we've overcome in our own lives. So maybe you could share a little bit about your story and your musical background and how all that sort of brought you to this moment.
Sure. Well, it's kind of like, how far back do you want me to go? But the kind of concise version of it is that I ran into a lot of problems with food and body image as a teenager. The foundations for those experiences were laid much earlier, but I've heard it described in terms of like the history kind of turned on the gas, and then what was happening when I was a teenager really lit the match. I went through an exceptionally bad time with food and body image. I met all the diagnostic criteria for a bunch of different eating disorders. And then as I kind of grew up and left school, and I got into the fitness industry and was lucky enough to do some work in the music industry, this kind of problem and preoccupation with dieting and body image, it kind of followed me. I thought that I'd gotten past the worst of it. I thought that I'd left that in my teenage years, but a more kind of insidious version of that followed me kind of into my 20s, and it was really pervasive. It managed to con its way into every single part of my life to the point where I was never really able to be fully present or really enjoy what was going on around me, because I was just so focused on how I looked, what I was eating, and this degree of body dysmorphia that I had. I wasn't seeing myself clearly. I wasn't making objective decisions about my nutrition and health. I was also using food as very much like a coping mechanism as well as alcohol and other substances. But it was this big mess of different things that you know, we could pathologize or go into detail about exactly what those things were, but it was a rough time. You know, things like when I was lucky enough to get some really cool opportunities in terms of the music industry and playing some big shows. The first time I ever got the opportunity to do an international tour, I was more concerned about things like, oh, what food is going to be available on the plane, and will there be a gym at the hotel? You know, this is like, I was in my early 20s, essentially getting the, like, lucky enough to go and do the rock star thing, and play that whole game. And here I was going, oh, I hope I can find food that fits my diet. Like, geez, like, yeah, it was rough. And no amount of work that I did was ever enough. No result I achieved ever made that part of me be quiet. I thought that, you know, when I get far enough, when I do enough, when I achieve enough, when I look good enough, I'll experience some degree of peace. But I took it a long way, and I did a lot. I achieved a lot. That peace never came.
Yeah. Well, thank you for sharing that. It really illustrates sort of how you're feeling along the way, and the enough piece. You know, I want to talk a bit more about that. Just on a side note for anybody listening, Marcus was on tour in Slash's show for some time. So that's a pretty cool thing, despite all of the other things going on. And so, so as we shared a little bit before the podcast as well, I mean, I feel a lot of the things you're saying, just change the context a little bit, felt very similar for me. Everything sort of revolved around an image that I wanted to create. And that image was really sheltering what was happening on the inside about being enough. And so I'm curious, so when you, I guess, came to your crossroads with this, and that takes a certain level of awareness, I always talk about awareness really is one of the greatest agents for change. When we sort of wake up and say, whoa, this is not serving me, this is not healthy, I'm not happy, that enough never comes. And so I'm just curious, for you, was the awareness something that came through a moment? Was it something that was gradually onset for you?
It all came to a head around 2017. Like, I'd made the transition into being a full-time touring guitar player. Like, I'd got my dream job, and all that was being paid to tour the world. And I couldn't ignore anymore that all the things that I was shooting for, I'd kind of got them, and I was as unhappy as I'd ever been. Like, I found myself being really unhappy, or just kind of lost, or feeling like really lonely or unfulfilled or whatever, in moments where I thought, I thought this moment would have been different. You know, like walking around like places in Europe and everything like that, going like, I'm here as a part of a band, like, this is my job. Why am I not just stoked? Like, why not? And then all the kind of effort that I was putting into my appearance and staying really healthy, and let's not kid ourselves, to look a certain way and all this kind of stuff. To be perfectly blunt, it wasn't getting me anything. Like, there was no currency in it. There was no value in it. Like, of course, there's something to be said for staying fit and healthy and everything like that. But going that extra mile and just going, all right, I'm going to be like cover model level ripped, and I'm going to do what's necessary to maintain that image or whatever. All the work that was going into that, I was like, this is not paying off. Like, in any way, shape or form, like, the people who I enjoy hanging out with do not give a shit. You know?
Yes. Right. Yeah. So it's just the slow pain that was sort of coming around you was part of that awareness. And I love what you said earlier as well about not being present, because of this narrative that was running in the background about what you had to do. I think that's so important for anybody listening, is that, being present is it's a skill, and it takes time to be in that moment, because most of us are literally in our thoughts and in a program running unconsciously most of the time. So what was the next step for you then? Because there, obviously, you then probably needed to do a little bit more exploration in terms of what was happening on the inside. What did you do?
To this day, I'm not really sure how the decision came around. Like, and of course, in hindsight, I might make it a little differently. But at that time, I realized that I needed to sort some things out. How I actually left the music industry is kind of complicated. I've never really talked about this in so much detail. I've always talked about the experience of touring with a band while kind of dealing with an eating disorder and kind of like body image stuff, and how I kind of needed to take time out to sort that out. But it at the same time, that wasn't really the whole decision. Like, there was another band that I really wanted to play for. It was like a new band kind of coming out of California, I think, or Nirvana. And it was just really cool hard rock band that I wanted to play for. There were some conflicting dates with the band that I already worked for. I rolled the dice on telling the band that I worked for at that time, look, I'm going to need you to find a fill-in for me for that particular tour because I'm going to be unavailable on these particular dates. And, you know, anyone who's in that industry knows, you know, if you take a step out and leave the door open, someone comes in, fills that space, and you're out, you're done. And I know that now, but yeah, the band that I wanted to tour with, like, that didn't end up happening. But at the same time, I was so just chronically exhausted at that point in time that I didn't fight it. I didn't care. I just kind of put everything aside and was like, I'm going to let go of everything that I'm pushing myself for right now. I literally went from doing the international tours to working in a tiny independent gym in Brighton in the UK just to get the space to get my head straight and figure out what the hell I needed to do to be fulfilled and to be happy, really. And yeah, that's how that kind of panned out. I hope that answers your question and that I didn't just ramble.
Yeah, no, that's fascinating, the process. I mean, everybody has a different way, I think, once the awareness is there of what that step needs to be. And it sounds like for you, just taking a step back and giving yourself some space to recenter. Yeah,
that was essentially it. I looked around and realized, like, I need to figure out what's going on. And in order to do that, I had to take a step back from international touring.
Yeah. Did you then explore any more, you know, sort of on the inner world? Are you a meditator? Do you practice any type of breath work, meditation, anything like that?
I struggled with meditation a lot, but actually that's a super interesting question because there were certain practices that I learnt to deal with stage fright. Like, I was just the worst stage fright in the world. Like, before I'd go on stage, like, my knees would shake, my hands would shake and everything. And it was just horrendous. And I went to try and get help for that. A very, very lovely, very patient psychotherapist or psychologist, I think. He was trying to teach me about mindfulness, essentially, and the power of that kinesthetic awareness and being with the physical sensations of the body. He was trying to get me to do that for a long time. And I was like, yeah, whatever. Like, can't you see that that's not going to solve my problem? I was really closed off to it. I just wanted to go into these sessions and rant about what was going on. And he was so patient. And then I found myself side stage at Wembley Arena in London, again, opening for Slash. It was 2014. All these voices going around in my head, all this mental noise, all this nervousness. And the only thing that I could do, the only thing that I could draw on at that point in time was like 30 seconds until we were going to go on stage. I just heard this psychologist's voice in my head, like, find your breath, find the physical sensation of your breath, be with the physical side of what you're experiencing. And I took my attention away from the snowballing thoughts and into my breath, into the feeling of the guitar in my hands, into the even the feeling of my jeans at the time, like just fully immersed myself in the kinesthetic experience, like the physical awareness of that particular moment. And obviously it didn't make all the voices and nervousness and everything like that completely go away, but it gave me enough space to do what needed to be done in that moment. And that's probably the closest thing that I have maybe to what you're describing, like what a client of mine called it, like weapons grade mindfulness at one point, like because I was trying to get him to understand. I was like, look, people talk about mindfulness and everything all the time, but very few people actually take it far enough to realize just how effective it can be. Because mindfulness, I don't know, tell me if you feel the same way, it's become a bit of a buzzword and some people just kind of dismiss it, but I don't think people take it as far as it can be taken often enough to really notice a huge difference. And I was left in a position where I had no choice but to do that, and as a result I discovered something for myself at least.
That's a great scenario to incorporate the breath. I mean, we've 20,000 some odd thousand breaths a day. We rarely take one conscious breath, and that's a lever on the nervous system, just bringing you back into that moment. And then you layered in the mindfulness, just noticing the feel of the guitar, the jeans against the skin, the little sensations that we usually don't tune into. I love what you just said about taking it far enough as well. And I won't go on a mindfulness rant. I could do that, but it is so true that, you know, mindfulness is really a way of being, and, you know, it's just, and it's a synonym for awareness. So it's just really noticing at a simple term, but everything and giving yourself a little bit of space, but you do need to be in a present moment state to notice. And typically we're a few moves down the board worrying about what's happening next, or dragging along something, our partner or that phone call or email that happened yesterday from the past. So present day now, you help people with this exact same thing that you've been through. And so, you know, emotional eating is something I talk about often with people, and actually teach mindful eating, which is just chewing your food and noticing that too, you know, things like that. But I'm just curious on your process, because, you know, so many people listening can relate to that feeling of binge eating and unbelievable cravings. And for some people it's patternized, even where they've got it managed for part of the day, but then in the evening, everything falls apart before they go to bed, and then they have a terrible sleep and they feel guilty about it and all the things. So, you know, I know that every client and every person you work with would probably have their own unique situation, but like, what would be like a couple of steps for people that you help to get them on the path of just managing
that? For sure. You're right. Everyone is different, but at the same time, there are a few things that we need to make sure happen for everybody. And the first thing that we need to kind of tick the box with to make sure that it's sorted, I know it sounds a bit boring and we can get into the mindfulness stuff and the mindset game and everything like that, like immediately after this. But the first thing is just making sure that you're not physiologically hungry. Like with everyone trying to do all these different diets and everything like that all the time, sure, there's a mindset element, there's an emotional element, there are all these different things that we can do to make healthy choices and everything like that. But if we're fundamentally not getting enough food or not getting a satisfying variety of different foods, trying to resolve issues with binge eating or with emotional eating or any of these kind of things is really pushing it uphill with a pointed stick. It's not impossible, but it's like the energy expenditure on trying to make different choices and trying to regulate emotionally and trying to stay kind of online with our food choices when our physiology is just screaming at us like, dude, I'm getting hungry. Like it's, So that's the kind of like the first thing that we need to do to make sure that you're actually getting a decent variety of foods. And that you're not kind of starving yourself. That's one of the inspiration for the podcast and the platform, Strong Not Starving. And from there, in a very broad sense, it becomes about identifying and responding to what we're feeling without food. It doesn't mean that food won't play a role in our emotional experience. Like, we are human. If we try to eat like robots, we will fail because we are in an environment that has a lot of, there's a lot of food in our environment. We have a lot of options and everything like that. And we are emotional creatures. Like, we love to think that we're logical, but we all have emotions, and if we don't manage them, they start to manage us. So this is where identifying what it is that we're feeling, not what we're thinking, but identifying what it is that we're feeling, and kind of understanding and validating those feelings, and even allowing those feelings without pandering to them, without allowing them to kind of drive us towards regrettable coping mechanisms. Essentially, there's a lot of resilience that I coach, a lot of resilience, a lot of opening the window of tolerance for different emotions. And I know to some people, it might sound like, oh, you know, like all that emotional stuff, like blah, blah, blah. Like, oh, really? Like, what we're doing is managing emotion in a sustainable way to increase your resilience, widen your window of tolerance, so that you don't have to lean on coping strategies that you'll end up regretting. So yeah, first we make sure that you're nourished. Then after that, it's identifying and responding to what you're experiencing, what you're feeling, and we go from there.
Yeah. I love the term window of tolerance. We use that a lot in the mindfulness circles as well. And the beautiful thing about that is it is trainable, as you said. So we can widen that window, and that is the resilience. I'm curious about men in particular. Do you work with just men, or do you work with men and women?
I work with both. Yeah.
With both. Okay. I feel women are, you know, the women I work with both as well. And I feel women are a little more in tune with this, with a little bit of guidance. Men, there's some resistance with the emotions, and it's just probably just the programming that we grew up with. And I think it's very difficult for men to be vulnerable at times with others, certainly even with themselves. But just curious, you know, is there, to have men sort of become more in touch with their emotions, is there some type of technique that you use, or a practice, or is this just more of a coaching case by case type thing?
That's a really good question. I don't have any magic tricks, but I am mindful of the kind of conversations that we have. You know, like, I'm not going to sit down with a man and go, okay, brother, you need to love yourself. Like, no, I'm not like,
get there,
yeah, like, really. I'm not, and again, like, self-love and everything of that is really important, but I'm not gonna, yeah, there are certain ways that I'm going to have this conversation. One of them being that an example I love to give is rehabbing injuries, like physical injuries, like with food and diet, for example. We might be on a diet, or we might be trying to stick to something regarding our diet that is causing a lot of problems. It might be causing binge eating, might be causing anxiety, might be causing stress, might be limiting us in terms of our relationships, what we can do socially, might be stressing us out at our job, distracting ourselves, essentially that lack of presence. Our diet might be a big part of why that's happening. And yet we keep maybe banging our head against a wall, just trying to make it work again and again, thinking that it's our willpower, that it's the problem. But really, if we had an athlete, let's say like an NFL player or something like that, and the way that they were playing the game was causing repeated injuries, that we'd take them off the field, rehab the injury, and address the strategy, not just send the poor dude back out onto the field and go, all right, just keep doing what you're doing, bro. Right. Don't change a thing.
Right.
Keep hurting yourself. It's fine. But that's essentially what we're talking about with food, whether we talk about food or emotions or whatever. It's just recognizing that, you know, man, something's not clicking here. There is damage happening. It's not sustainable. Let's fix it. Let's address what needs to be addressed. It doesn't mean that we need to, you know, all cry together if that's not what you're into. But at the same time, like, let's address what needs to be addressed.
Yeah, and I think for many of us, the, you know, stress is the health epidemic of the 21st century. So for a lot of us, it's just overwhelm. Yeah. Window of tolerance has been, is a hair trigger wide. And yeah, food is often the coping mechanism or the way to feel better, self-soothe, I guess, in the
Absolutely.
Moment.
Absolutely. And the thing is, it works. Food works. It's yeah. very temporarily. And there are ramifications of leaning on food in that way too frequently. But the thing is, food is accessible for most of us, especially like processed food. It's everywhere. It's usually cheap and it works. And that's part of the problem.
Yeah. And it's designed just to trigger that right amount of dopamine release for the next bite to fall to. Right? Yeah. It's brutal. Yeah. And so I'm just thinking about my own sort of relationship with eating. And again, it was around, as I mentioned, just trying to always put size on. And I did some physique competitions and, you know, in my later years. So I guess I was like in my mid 40s. So this is back in 2018. And and it was so interesting after that, how it really messed myself up psychologically. I think afterwards, my relationship to food was because I had starved myself so much. And then it was like eating so much. And afterwards, it took me a while to get past that. But one of the tools that I used, and now that I'm part of longevity groups as well, is intermittent fasting. And I find for me that it allows me to be a little bit more present with what my cues in my body are. I find that, you know, it helps me energetically. It helps me with my digestion. I know that's a kind of a specific thing, but I'm just curious what your thoughts are on either intermittent fasting or even just doing a fast every so often, like a longer one based on maybe a schedule over the term of a year or something.
That's a really interesting one because the research and the literature from the, the official research and literature on disordered eating, on binge eating, would not encourage intermittent fasting. It would encourage more of just, you know, the meals and snacks spread evenly throughout the day. But this is the thing about individuals, right? Like, and this is the thing that frustrates me a little bit about the space, like the space where people are trying to encourage better relationships with food. Everyone has a slightly different process. And when I first started working with people who have, or maybe ventured into some really dicey or rough territory with food or anxiety around food, body image, binge eating, everything like that, I was trying to follow the textbook, like word for word. I was trying to say, okay, everyone that comes to me, I need you guys to do exactly this, this, and this. But as time goes on, the message that I will say is that based on the data, it's most likely that XYZ is going to produce a positive outcome in most people. But my job is to be here and help you cultivate that awareness that we're talking about, give you the optimal chances of success. And that doesn't mean taking away your autonomy. So if someone comes to me and says, you know, I'm doing ABC. One of the things that I'm doing is intermittent fasting. That seems to be helping. I'm not like, my first thing that I do is like, okay, let's, if that's something that you really want to do, and if you feel like it's working, let's not discount it straight away. Like, I personally, I didn't have a great relationship with fasting. I found that it seemed to help me for a while, and then it kind of reinforced some of the bingier type elements of the way I was eating. I became very accustomed to eating very large meals. I found it very, very hard to stop eating. at just a moderate amount. I was like, I don't feel satisfied unless I've had like a lot of food. And so for me, it wasn't really a winner, but I have worked with people. I'm currently working with one person, maybe two, in fact, who do still fast. So I would never say like, okay, if you're struggling with binge eating, just jump on intermittent fasting. It's going to solve the problem. But at the same time, if someone comes to me and they feel that fasting is a good fit for them in some way, shape or form, I'm not going to discount it. And this is very much about finding your thing that works for you. We look at the data and go, okay, this is what seems to be most reliable, but what do you know about yourself? How are you feeling right now? Where are your decisions coming from? That's what we want to focus on.
Yeah. Yeah, the actual feeling and what's working. I'm curious then, would that sort of your same philosophy apply? I mean, obviously you would encourage whole foods and things like this, but when if somebody's more leaning towards more of a plant-based diet versus a carnivore diet, would that the same thing, right? I guess do you actually prefer something in that regard?
I have had people work with me. This is a this one is a minefield, to be honest.
Because the
really difficult thing here. Let's do the plant-based thing first. I am very well acquainted with the moral side of a plant-based diet. It is very difficult for me to make comments on vegan culture or plant-based diets or anything like that, because we've got to understand that by definition, people only come and talk to me when something isn't working for them. So if we were to go just on my perception, I would say that nothing works, right? Because people only ever come to see me when something's like wrong. So I get people coming to me who are trying to stick to a plant-based diet and it's not working out for them and they need a bit more freedom surrounding what they're doing. I get people coming to me who are on, you know, more animal product based diets, like exclusive, like the carnivore type thing or whatever. They're coming to me saying that it's not working. So I would take my personal opinion with this with a grain of salt, because it's not, I can't really say what's going to work for you. I can just say that every week people come to me saying that all kinds of different diets and different approaches aren't working for them. The thing that is most reliable that I can say is that these people usually improve with a more balanced approach, whatever that might look like for them. It doesn't mean that someone who doesn't want to eat animal products has to start eating animal products. It you know, doesn't mean that someone who's into carnivore and that kind of thing has to, you know, completely reinvent the way they think about the world. But I can say that usually when something's going wrong, a few steps towards the center often helps.
Well articulated around all the minefields.
Thank you. I think
that's a nice drill dance there.
See me sidestepping there. I think we got it.
Yeah. No, that's fantastic. And you know what? I think that just reinforces the point of, you know, having a coach or having a mentor or, you know, someone like yourself, because it's so confusing. Yeah. There's so many conflicting, you know, philosophies and protocols and, you know, which way to go. So I think towards center is a really good place to sort of put that. So Marcus, for yourself, I'm always curious what people like yourself, you know, who are doing this work and helping so many people, what does your daily routine look like? Your self-care routine, I guess. Do you have something that you stick with every day or is it, does it fluctuate? What's it look like for you?
Well, Monday through Friday, I get up at the same time every day. I get up at 7. The only that fluctuates on the weekend just because my wife is like, I don't want to hear the alarm on the weekend. But like, I get up at the same time every day. I find that helps me to just fall asleep at a consistent time and get sleepy at a consistent time every day. A lot of my philosophy with food and everything like that is always looking at that balance of nutrition, satiety and enjoyment and convenience. Like, I do not have time to be making a 10-step lunch, you know, like I will make very simple food. I start the morning with a workout followed by like a shake, and I'll put, you know, protein in my shake along with like, some frozen strawberries and frozen spinach and all that kind of stuff, just to kind of get me started. I enjoy my coffee. I think a lot of the things I do when it comes to self-care, there are a couple of things that I regulate that I maybe used to do a lot more of. Like, I used to play video games a lot. Or when I say a lot, I mean, I would go through periods where I would just play like and just switch off. I would kind of reach the end of my tether with kind of my window of tolerance for existence and just go, right, I'm disappearing into a video game for like 2 months or something like that. But yeah. I've really stopped doing that because I realized that it was closing my window of tolerance. Like, I need to actually be more present with whatever I'm feeling, even if that feeling is associated with some kind of burnout. Like, if I'm burnt out, I need to feel it and do something about it rather than just kind of cover it up and then go again, repeat the same pattern. So yeah, my food is pretty simple. I eat an even balance of all macros. Like, I don't lean hard one way or the other. I just aim for a lot of fresh foods when I can. And yeah, like there's no real secret to what I'm doing. I do my best to practice. I'm always learning about like communication within relationships and everything like that, and like with my wife and with my work and everything. And if I was to look at stress management and what I do in terms of self-care, a big part of that is making sure that I'm communicating really well in my personal relationships, because that avoids a whole bunch of stress. Like, it means that I'm not bottling things up until they, you know, explode out of me in some kind of huff or whatever. I'm drip feeding and communicating. And yeah, I know it all sounds kind of pretty middle of the road, but the reality of it is that that's what it is. I make sure that every day I spend at least some time on music just for my like personal fulfillment, to just really stay connected to that one thing that I do just for myself. I spend time with my dog in the park. There's no magic formula. It's my personal balance.
Yeah, that sounds perfect, brother. I mean, it seems like you're also, you know, living what you teach others as well, and it's balanced, but also it seems that it's very intentional with all of those different things that are also important and consistent as well, probably, right? You said at least Monday to Friday, that's the drill, and you know that consistency adds up to something.
Yeah, 100%. Like, I really appreciate you noticing that and mentioning that. Like, none of the habits that I have seem to be, you know, none of them are really extreme or out there or anything like that, but they're all very, very intentional and very, very consistent. That's where I find the magic happens for me.
Yeah. Amazing, brother. Well, I want to thank you so much for taking time here today and just acknowledge you as well for the work you're doing. It's interesting how, you know, you mentioned we don't lead with self-love, but what you're doing is really helping people get there. You know, when we can feel better more often, and you know, we feel better in general physically, we start to have better thoughts and we start to feel better about ourselves. And you know, that lack of self-worth, which is certainly something, you know, I've contended with, you know, to have to fill my cup and get validation from the outside world, is is something that doesn't happen overnight. And so you're doing your part and helping that. So I appreciate
that. Thank you, man. I appreciate you very much.
Excellent, brother. Well, thanks again for your time, man. Thank you.